Pro Tem Wells. Good evening, Council.
We might have some trouble hearing.
I'm gonna come and fix. I'm gonna come and fix that very soon.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Council and staff. Miss Julie, could you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Onslow.
Here.
Councilmember Ziemer.
Here.
Councilmember Wells.
Here.
Councilmember Lindsay.
Here.
Councilmember Akeley.
Here.
Councilmember Day.
Here.
Mayor Stoss.
Here. Thank you. Mr. Stewart, are there any late changes to the agenda?
No late changes, Mr. Mayor.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll start off this evening with a presentation, the first half 2020 financial report. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. Normally, we start off our budget process with an economic update, but since comparing 2019 economics to 2018 doesn't make a lot of sense right now, we thought we'd do the first half budget to actual report and kind of look at that, as that's a little bit more appropriate for what we're seeing right now. As we go to slide two, for everybody who's following along, we'll look at the 2020 reserves, and these are per the financial management policies that council approved. In all of the different reserve categories other than building and permitting, we did see a percentage increase, pretty significant increases in each of those. The reason that building and permitting went down slightly is because we didn't see quite as much expense and just a slight revenue reduction in 2019 when compared to 2018. For the water fund and the storm fund, they were both pretty significant. The main reason for the increase in the reserves there is the capital repair and replacement. One of the policies the council approved is setting aside 5% of rate revenues for capital repair and replacement, and that and the capital reserve, because we have accepted so many new subdivisions and different development donations for infrastructure, makes up the bulk of the percentage increase in the reserves. As we go along here, if you have any questions, please let me know and I can try to answer those as we go, or we can answer any questions at the end. So for the next slide, slide three, general fund revenue. We did do a budget amendment earlier this year to address our forecast for potential revenue reductions due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So our budget does show a reduction from what was originally adopted for 2020, and that's $7.6 million is the budget. Currently, we're at $4.1 million, about 54% of budget. And the highlights are property taxes are a little bit higher. That's mainly as a result of increased new construction from last year to this year. When I compare our levy amount to the levy amount last year on a percentage basis, we're currently showing a 2% higher delinquency rate right now compared to the same time period last year. So it's not nearly what we thought could be a potential. Where we would really see more of a delinquency probably would be in the second half payments that we'll see in October. But that's a promising sign that we're that close right now. Retail sales tax, again, we're always on a two-month lag, and this does include March and April, which were our first 2 months of the shutdown and stay at home process with the COVID-19. So it does show a smaller because of that 2 month lag. Where we do see a difference, and this is pretty close to what we were forecasting, is an 18% decline in retail sales tax from this time last year. We just got in the numbers, or the initial numbers for July, and that'll push us up to about a 21% decline in retail sales tax. At our budget amendment, we forecast a 25%. To offset that, though, we are seeing utility and other taxes increasing about 13%, and that's taking up some of that loss from retail sales tax. So we aren't seeing a hit to our reserves at this point in the general fund, which very promising. The best news, though, that I can give you is we had really thought that we'd see a significant downturn in development. And actually, completely the opposite has happened. Since that opened up, we have seen a significant increase, mainly in single-family residential. And our permitting and then our planning and development revenues are up 39% from this time last year. And they're coming in and trying to get everything done as soon as possible. I've got a couple of theories about that. One is there's a very low inventory on the market right now. So we're expecting as soon as they can build a house, it's going to sell, partly because there are still people out there that qualify for mortgages, and the rates are at historic lows right now, so buying houses. Where we're seeing more of a downturn is in the commercial, and that's what's affecting our retail sales tax as well as the commercial construction. That's where the majority of our loss in that area is. The other area that I do want to point out is the intergovernmental and grants. It looks like we're at 93% of budget. The reason for that is we've taken our first grant reimbursement for the CARES Act related to any expenses that are occurring as a result of COVID-19, but we have not recognized that dollar amount in the budget yet. So in the second half, or the fourth quarter of this year, we'll do a budget amendment to recognize that revenue, but we have already received $173,000 from the state related to that, so that kind of skews that number. But overall, we're up a little over 14% from this time last year. It's a little bit more promising than what we talked about, but there still is a lot of unknowns. So we're still watching out on a weekly and monthly basis to see where everything is going. So if we can go to the next slide.
I had a quick question on the sure. First slide. Can you give me an example of the other utility and other taxes? What are the other taxes?
That's excise tax to government properties that are leased out to private parties. So that's a really small amount. That's typically about $5,000 a year.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So on the general fund expense, this is where I think we see the most promise in meeting any type of budgetary issues that we may have this year. And if you look at the bottom line number for general fund expense, budget right now, and it's projecting out to where we will be almost $700,000 under our budget, because not that we're not doing things, we're looking at our core services, but there are things that training and travel and some of the things like that we are seeing reduced expenses and items that were still in the budget that we're either spending less on or not having some of those occur at this point. But I think that's going to be a significant help on our fund balance at the end of the year. Most of the departments are looking at what is necessary and what is needed so that they can provide the same core services. The areas that are a little bit higher than last year is judicial. That's because our costs for the battleground courts went up a little bit last year compared to the year before, or this year compared to the year before, is up. And the main reason for that is because of increased costs related to the audit. And then we have a new position that we didn't have last year. Administration, that one is because of intern costs that we've seen all year long versus just a portion of the year last year. and then a few extra expenses that have been involved. It will trend out to the end of the year, though, both of those to be under the forecasted budget. General government facilities is over. That's because the majority of the current year to date is related to our liability insurance. And then information technology is quite a bit over this time last year. And the reason for that is most of our software annual maintenance costs have already been paid this year. Last year, we didn't get billed until a little bit later into the year. So we're going to be at or under budget there at the end of the year, but some of it's come a little bit earlier than normal. And I think that's really the main ones that I wanted to point out. Other than probably the transfer to street fund, because we're seeing a motor fuel tax, we have had to do some of the transfers from general fund to street fund earlier than we normally would, and we're going to have to watch that as we go through the year. So if we can go ahead and go to the next slide, number five. Fund balance, the $4.8 million, and right now we have a net increase of about $374,000, so we are seeing an increase in fund balance. And again, a good portion of that is related to less expense, and then also that CARES Act reimbursement that we got as well. Reserved amounts, again, are a little bit higher. And then net ending and available balance, that's what we have available for anything outside of policy reserves, are higher than this time last year as well. Let's go to the next one for the street fund. Who is about 58% of budget, mainly because we had to transfer more, as I just mentioned, from general fund to street fund. Vehicle motor fuel tax, and I'm sure you've all read the stories, a lot less travel going on, so that means a lot less fuel tax is being collected at the state level. So we are about $50,000 down in our vehicle motor fuel tax, which means that we'll have to have a matching amount of expense reductions as well. Expense, we have been able to keep our expenses down. We're about 42% of budget, so we're right on target to be able to match that reduction in the motor fuel tax. Fund balance, we don't keep a large fund balance in here. It's mainly general fund that holds the fund balance, but we are currently have a positive fund balance, and that's because we transferred more, so we'd have some operating capital in here to do some of the maintenance for the streets. If we can go on to the next one. So drug fund and transportation benefit district, both of those we're just receiving in revenue this year. We have no expense. There's no resolution yet that I've heard on the transportation benefit district discussed at the Supreme Court level. So hopefully we'll be soon. If it is affirmed that we do have to refund all of that, that will be a pretty significant task for the refund all of those fees, in addition to a little bit of cost for the city for mailing and labor time and things like that. Debt service fund, revenue and expense, all of that is related to either bonds for operation complex or the CRESA loan, the small loan that we have, and then also a slight amount that we got for the bond issuance, the first draw on the Public Works Operations Center and the issuance costs. We'll see the rest of that come in at the end of the year so we can pay back the interfund loan. Slide, please. So real estate excise tax is right on the budget forecast, although I do expect this to increase a little bit just over what I saw here this last month. There were quite a few more homes sold, so our revenue increased in June. I do expect that from what I'm seeing in the account we have at the county right now. I'm seeing an increase for July as well. So hopefully we do see an increase and build up the fund balance a little bit. Are that come next year when we have debt service coming for the Public Works Operations Center, we can pay both for the Outdoor Recreation Complex and the Operations Center out of REIT. And then that way we do have some more flexible funds out of general fund to use for some capital items and things like that. park impact fees were slightly over budget on expense. Or on revenue, excuse me, and expense. We do have a couple of projects that we've done. We purchased the Boyce property and have been working on a few other things. Fund balance is increasing. We did back fees earlier this year, so we are starting to see some transfer and usage of those. So I do expect to see a little bit more. We don't have a large outstanding amount on park impact fees, but I do expect to see some more usage of those this year and potentially into the early part of next year. Traffic impact fees, revenue is at 23%. And the big reason for that is we've had quite a few road projects that qualified for impact fees to be credited back to them. And we did get a lot of projects done that we would not have been able to do ourselves by the developer by issuing the credits. So we will have a pretty significant amount. We have some more coming up due to issue here shortly. And we're seeing a pretty high percentage of single family residential that is paid by credit now rather than and I do expect that to continue. Next year, I'm forecasting about 40% paid and 60% by credit. And I think we're gonna see that and maybe even a little bit higher paid by credit through the rest of this year. The fund balance though has increased. We're up to about 1.8 million in traffic impact fees, which we're putting aside for a section of road that we'll have to do or match funds if we can get some grants for some of the other road projects that will not be done by developers. Okay. So next slide, please. General capital projects. The majority of the revenue and the expense is related to the Public Works Operations Center. The interfund loan that came in to pay for that and then the expense to do that and costs. We have used a slight amount of fund balance. We are waiting for some grant funding to come back, and that's a reason for the decrease there. We're most of the South Third project is paid for by grant, but we'll do a single request for reimbursement as a project winds down and we get all the closeout paperwork finished. Our equipment replacement fund, we put in all but a small amount of revenue for the year. The rest of that will be put in here in July. And then most of the, all of the vehicles that we had planned on being replaced other than the hook truck, whichever you want to call that, that's been ordered and we'll be getting that estimated in October. And so all of our expense will be done by the first part of the fourth quarter. We will use quite a bit of our fund balance and we'll need to start building that again beginning next year. Next slide. So on to our utility operating funds. Our water utility is about 39% of budget for revenue. And that's pretty typical for this time of year. We do, as of June, we've had three of our six cycles, but our two highest usage cycles are the one that's billed in August and October. So we should see a significant increase through those two billing periods. To match that though, our expense is down. It's at 40% of budget. So we have been watching our costs there, although we do have a few maintenance items scheduled that are in the process of occurring right now. And then we still have debt service that will be paid on the loan well that will be paid in October. So those will occur at that point, but we are expecting that we'll be under budget in the water utility fund. We have seen a slight increase in fund balance. Hoping to see a higher fund balance increase by the end of the year. And we are showing a good available fund balance for any operating or maintenance items that come up throughout the year. Stormwater, because this fund is a lot more stable in, we don't have a usage, it's a flat fee. We're at 54% of revenue, and the reason for that, and I could say that about water as well, both water and storm have seen an 11% and a 7% growth in new accounts. Water with a 5% increase in usage. So both of those, that the development and the growth in the city have really helped out there, mainly with stormwater. That's something that we've really needed, that influx. A lot of that has to do with the commercial that has come on over the last 12 months. Expense is about 48% of budget, so they're right on target to where they need to be, and they are getting quite a bit of work done and getting ahead in some of their maintenance items, preparing, you know, as we go over the 10,000 threshold for population. Fund balance, we are seeing an increase currently in stormwater and expect that increase. The one thing that we are watching is our reserve amount has increased pretty significantly in storm. So we're watching that to make sure that we are keeping flexible funding for some of the projects that we have planned over the next few years. Next slide, please. So our SDC fund has seen a significant amount of revenue come in. We're at 83.5% of budget. Reason for that is all this construction that's occurring. They're trying to power through things pretty quickly, and a lot of meter causing the SDCs to be charged right away. So we are seeing and expecting to see a much higher amount than for that area. Not to mention, we have very limited SDC credits out there, so we are getting paid on just about everything. Expense is quite a bit less right now than budget, but we do have some projects that are currently in place, and we have a few that we're still waiting on the state as far as water rights and things like that for them to get back to us to finalize that. We definitely have seen an increase in our fund balance, and we'll see an increase in the fund balance by the end of the year. Water utility capital, revenue and expense right on as we're SDC fund mainly. Again, we're working on the projects and expect more of the expense to come in later in the year. Stormwater utility or storm capital, we really have just started the one project we have in there this year, and that's paid with a Public Works Trust Fund loan. We just sent in the first request here before the end of the fiscal year for the state, and the things are getting ramped up there to be well underway and completed early next year, I believe. Next slide, please. So that's it.
What does SDC stand for?
That's the system development charges. So that was it for the budget to actual. So you also got your investment report for the month, but for the first half of 2020, we currently have about $10.46 million in our investment portfolio, $1.6 million in municipal bonds, $251,000 in U.S. agency bonds. Our Clark County investment pool is almost $7 million, and Washington State LGIP is $1.6 million. Current yield on investment, which actually, again, I say this all the time, but 2.71% is really good. It seems awfully low when you remember what investment interest used to be. Weighted average maturity, that's, you know, our average of how many months we have things on the books. It's just about 67 months. Our Clark County investment pool is 2% over the policy maximum. That's mainly a reason of pretty much every U.S. agency bond that we had on the books all got called because they were anywhere from 1.9 to 3. They all got called because they could sell them at 0.4% or in some cases 0.24%. So that's why it went. Don't want to move the funds out of the Clark County investment pool because we're getting 1.38% right now, which is actually pretty high compared to anything else. We barely receive anything about 0.1 in our bank account. Our weighted average maturity is over our policy limit of 60 months, but that will change as of July 1st when one of our municipal 120,000 matures, and so that'll go down quite a bit. Otherwise, everything looks good on our investments. Any questions?
No, sounds good.
Questions, counselors? Counselor Onslow, any questions?
No, it sounds very good. I liked it.
Okay, Counselor Zimmer.
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you. Okay,
thank you. Counselor Akeley?
No questions.
Counselor Day?
No questions, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Wells, any questions?
I have one, and I don't know whether Kirk would have it or not. And the question is, you mentioned he was getting a book truck?
Yes.
What size? Single axle, double axle?
I think it's double. I think it's preferred.
Oh. And you have a rough idea what it costs?
Yeah, it was about $265,000.
I'd come with how many beds? One bed? Flat bed?
I think it's the one dump bed, but we also are buying a two or three different, a sander, a chipper bed, and another dump bed from Vancouver, all for about $300 a piece.
Oh, okay. I was asking, I did see one go at the auction up at Ritchie Brothers for $140,000. But it didn't have any beds or anything with it. So that was my question.
Right. And they specifically looked at what worked for the city of Ridgefield. They talked to multiple different agencies, the state, Vancouver, Battleground, and looked at what our needs were, both for weight and turning radius and all that kind of stuff that, you know, I don't know as much about it. They were very diligent in what they looked at before we decided that was the right option for the city.
You know what kind?
Worth.
Say it again, please.
I believe it Kenworth.
Oh,
is Brian on?
Yes, I'm on. Okay. Yes, so I believe it's a single axle. We tried to basically find the shortest, most compact, and tightest turning radius hook truck available on the market. That's quite a bit of research, looking for potentially used equipment first, and then also looking at what other jurisdictions and other agencies are using and talking to the staff that actually use those trucks day-to-day to get feedback. And based on all that, the direction that we just... a new vehicle, a Kenworth, again, that had the shortest length and tightest turning radius for the sort of work that we're doing sort of in tight quarters here in Ridgefield. And it will be equipped with a plow. As Kirk mentioned, we're going to get multiple beds for it, sanding bed, a dump bed, and a chipper bed so that we can use the chipper and blow directly to the back of it.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep. Counselor Lindsay?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Kirk. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Move on to the consent agenda. I would accept a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we accept the consent.
Sandra Day, I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda as presented. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. Move on to our first order of business, a motion approval of amendment to building and construction order. Ms. Lust?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of Council. The proposal here is to simply terminate the building and construction order. The document had no end date on it, so the it now. Basically, there aren't any restrictions to building and construction that need to still be articulated at a city level. The health and safety restrictions are all coming from the state, and our staff are continuing to enforce those restrictions. So the motion is, rather than to keep the city building and construction order going indefinitely, to simply end it and defer to those state policies and restrictions that we are already following.
Great, thank you. Councilor Onslow, any questions? Ms. Lust?
No.
Councilor Zimmer?
No questions, thank you.
Councilor Akeley?
No, thank you.
Okay. Councilor Day?
No questions.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Wells, any questions?
No questions.
Okay. And then finally, Councilor Lindsay?
No questions, thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Council. I would accept a motion.
This is Rob Akeley. I'd like to make a motion to for the approval of the amendment to the building and construction order as presented.
This is Dana Zimmer, I will second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to approve the amendment to the building and construction order as presented. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. Next order of business is resolution number 581, the approval of an amendment to the financial policy number 07. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor and Council. Each year as we begin the budget process, we review the financial management policies and the budget policies to see if there is any relevant changes that are needed. This year, there's no changes recommended to the financial management policy, but the budget policy we are is, and this comes out of a couple of changes in GASB, which is the Government Accounting Standards Board, and pronouncements that they've made of things we need to change in our financial statements, both of which have come up the last couple of years. One of them that went into play for the 2019 financial statements was fiduciary activities, and it required us as a fiduciary for the school district to collect and then remit the school impact fees to actually begin recognizing the revenue and the expense for that, which kind of skews what we're actually doing, since all we're doing is collecting it and remitting it right away. So what we're recommending in the budget policy would be that we don't have to budget for that, and so we don't need to show that in our budget to actuals, which if someone was looking at our budget, like on ClearGov, where we show our budget to actual all the time, is they would see it and think that we were way over on our revenue and we were way over on our expense. Well, that's not really what we did, was collect and remit something, and an accounting pronouncement required us to recognize that difference in the past. The other one is for GASB 87 leases, which the last 2 years, what that makes us have to do is, when we enter into a long-term lease, like up here at the RAC or other places that we may lease, like when we enter into a lease for the new public safety building, at the beginning of do we have to recognize payment that we do? We have to recognize the entire cost of the lease, even though we're not spending anything, we're not having any cash go out. But for accounting purposes, we have to recognize what's called an other revenue source, which is the value of that lease for the next, you know, however many years it may be, like 15 years. And then also the full expense, which in the case of the rack last year, it would have been over $2 million. So again, we showed in our budget to actual comparisons when we weren't. It was strictly a cash entry for accounting principles, just to show it so investors could look at our financial statements and see that we do have a long-term commitment. But in reality, we're not spending the money. So by adopting the changes in the budget policy, it makes it so we no longer have to recognize either revenue or expense in that. We'll still show it in the financial statement, so an investor will see that. It doesn't affect our budget portion. It causes us to have to add an additional note entry to explain why we show over budget, which to the, you know, casual resident or reader of our budget to actual, they wouldn't really understand that. So we're trying to make it a little bit easier. We're really doing what our revenues really are, what our expenses really are. The last piece of that is depreciation. Historically, we've never budgeted depreciation on our capital assets. And so we thought it appropriate to just add that into the budget policy as well, just to make sure that's addressed. Those are really the main changes to the budget policy. If there's any questions, I can answer those. Otherwise, I recommend that Council adopt Resolution 581 as presented.
Thank you, Kirk. Councilor Ronzo, any questions of Mr. Johnson?
No, thank you.
Councilor Zimmer?
No, thank you.
Okay. Councilor Akeley?
No, thank you.
Councilor Day?
No, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Wells?
No question.
Okay. And Councilor Lindsay?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I would accept the motion.
Mr. Mayor,
Jennifer Lindsay, I move to adopt resolution number 581 as presented.
Seconded.
Okay. Okay. It's been moved and seconded to adopt resolution number 581 as presented. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. We'll move on to Council reports. Councilor Onslow, anything to add this evening?
In the last couple of weeks, no, we had a great briefing. Worked on the grapes. They're coming along nicely. And let me see, I had the opportunity to listen to the governor's web next, whatever that thing is, and I don't know that I'd like, so that's it.
Okay. Councilor Zimmer.
I've been with all of the stuff with systemic racism and things like that. I've been talking to a few community members, as well as had a meeting with one of our young people. She's very, Charlie Fisher, she's very passionate about everything going on and being involved in that. And just, I kind of took some notes and some things to think about and research a little bit. So hopefully I can do that and be involved. What we may need to do to make a few changes, just even in our own community. So other than that, that's all I have for tonight.
Great, thank you very much. Councilor Akeley.
Councilor Onslow's team of volunteers trimmed the grapes last week and this week. I attended the Port Commission meeting yesterday, virtual, and they announced they will be evaluating the bids for the Wisdom Ridge commercial building project next week, and they hope to break ground in August. Yesterday, I had a pre-job walk and meeting with the Richfield Arts Association, down at the Dragon Boat at the port's property. We're going to start painting on the colors on the boat this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. each day. We have some volunteers lined up through the Arts Association and the Lions Club. We're minimizing our volunteer crew to five volunteers at a time. And we have them spaced out. The boat's quite large, as you know. It's about 40 feet long. And so we're starting that process. And so next week, if you get a chance to go on a walk down by the port, maybe walk by that Dragon Boat and check on progress. That's all I have to report.
Thank you very much. Councilor Day.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I attended virtually the Clark Regional Wastewater District Commissioners meeting. And then Monday night, one of the big things for the city of Richfield and the community is the library approved the bid to begin construction on the library here in Richfield. So it will be some deconstruct one part of the building and modifying on the other half. But they expect to move out the current library resources in the building beginning a week from Monday, and they will have limited access and support services, but still will be doing curbside and other support to the community. So this is
Can you hear us? Okay. All right. Thank you, Councilor Day. Mayor Pro Tem Wells?
It wasn't connected.
I really don't have anything to report. I've been under the weather a little bit. But I did, one thing I would like to report is the worker bee, and I think it's Mike, has been working on the median in around the roundabouts and that, and he's doing one awesome job. They're getting all the shrubbery pruned in as in years.
Awesome, thank you. Councilor Lindsay.
Hi, I had a great city manager briefing this week. That's about all I've got. Hopefully there'll be more coming up soon.
Okay, thank you, Councilor.
Thank you.
From my perspective, I have we need to appoint two council members to serve on the 2021 Budget Advisory Committee, and I have heard from Council Member Akeley and Councilor Lindsay have volunteered to be on that committee. So, could I have a I'd like to hear a motion to approve Council Member Akeley and Council Member Lindsay to the 2021 Budget Committee.
This is Dana Zimmer. I would like to make Councilor Lindsay and Councilor Akeley to the 2021 Advisory Financial Advisory Committee.
Thank you.
Sandra Dice, second.
It's been moved and seconded to appoint Council Members Akeley and Lindsay to the 2021 Budget Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. Addition to that, we are going to appoint a citizen to serve on the 2021 Budget Committee, and citizen Clyde Burkle has come forward again and is excited to be a part of that committee as well. So I would like to hear a motion to appoint Clyde Burkle to the 2021 Budget Advisory Committee as a citizen.
This is Ron Onslow. I move to appointment of Clyde Burkle to the Budget Advisory Commission.
Second.
Jennifer Lindsay. Okay. It's been moved and seconded to appoint as a citizen at large Mr. Clyde Burkle to the 2021 Budget Advisory Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you, Council. The last thing that I wanted to just mention is an update on the YMCA. I heard from the developer last week, Mr. Durgesh Patel. He has secured 100% financing. He has signed or brought over the memorandum of understanding. Ms. Parker is reviewing the MOU for the city of Ridgefield. And when she blesses it, Mr. Stewart will sign that and then we'll send it over to the YMCA. So we're moving forward quickly and it's gonna be a great project. With that, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple of things for the people that are on this call. There are two things that you have emails about in your inbox. The first is a copy of the letter that was signed by Mayor Stos and the mayors of Vancouver, Washougal, Camas, and Le Centre to the County Board of Health and to the Secretary of Health for the State of Washington with regards to the request from LULAC to consider systemic racism as a public health crisis. The details are in your email. And thank you to the council who unanimously approved the authority for the mayor to sign that letter. Secondly, there is an email in your inbox with specific details of Governor Inslee and Secretary Wiesmann's latest updates to restrictions associated with COVID-19. Obviously, we've seen an uptick in cases nationally. We have now hit, officially, we have hit 4 million cases. It took 15 days from 3 million to 4 million. The time period between each million cases has exponentially decreased. So we're seeing this uptick nationally as well as at a state level and a county level. So there are more restrictions, the details of which are contained within your email. We'll be working with our businesses and with our residents to assure that they know more about that. We will also be beginning the Masking for a Friend campaign next week to really promote facial coverings as an opportunity for us to stay out and about and keep doing the things we want to do. Last thing I'd mention about those is that we are already having conversations with our tap rooms because there was a question with regards to whether tap rooms were able to stay open in these new restrictions that have just been issued. Our early understanding is that tap rooms may continue operation for outside seating even when these new standards kick in, but we will be getting confirmation from the state. And with that, happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions, Council?
Okay.
Mr. Cast.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have a lot for you this evening. I just wanted to thank Councilman Wells.
Dana has a question.
Notes on Mr. Vinny's work out there at the interchange. I'll pass that along. I've complimented him previously. It's nice to see that he's really kind of taken ownership and has pride in keeping the junction looking good. He's doing fantastic work out there. Our crews have been taking advantage of the good weather here and been getting caught up on some mowing and the like. We did have a little bit of a labor issue due to a potential COVID exposure on our storm team, but the other groups were able to jump in and assist in completing some of that work, and they're all back to work now. And on the engineering side, our staff's been working diligently from home and is pretty much caught up to date on all development review at this time. So that's excellent. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good job. Councilor Zimmer.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead,
yes,
Councilor.
You might know about the pedestrian crossing lighting at the roundabout at Royal and Pioneer.
I actually, just as we were sitting here in this meeting, sent an email to my contact at Washington. About a week and a half ago, I had sent him some revised plans for, made some adjustments based on their previous comments, and just sent a sort of a tickler to ask what the status of that was so that we can move ahead with ordering those signs. In preparation for ordering those signs, I've asked our TAP street supervisors to get an update the revised layout, which he did. One interesting item to note is that in like the one over at the high school, for example, we actually used powered push buttons that then communicate with the radio to those signs. With the manufacturing the way it is right now, those are actually back ordered for something like 8 months or something, so we're going to have to print a solar-powered solution for those, which may change the budget ever so slightly, but we're working with the vendor right now to see you know, what our options are there. But we hope to get those ordered, and in the past it's been a month to a month and a half from what we've seen to get those materials, and then our crew will get those installed.
Oh, great. Thank you for the update.
Thank you.
Ms. Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to give a quick, since it's been a couple meetings since I did that, for residential permits. We've actually seen this year, year-to-date, an increase in both permits submitted and permits issued over 2019, January 1 to July 23rd. A pretty significant increase of 40% for submittals and 74% for issuances, and both of those year-to-date are each over 300 permits. Of course, the low month was April, when we had the most COVID-related restrictions on submittals and issuances. But as of June and July, we've really bounced back. So far in July, we've had 28 new single-family residence submittals and 64 issuances. And the fact that the number of permits being issued is positive for our revenues, because that's when the developers owe us all their deferred payments. So these are, a lot of these are permits that have been approved and have been sitting on our shelves, and developers are really starting to come in and pay for them and take them off our hands, which is great. As far as commercial permits go, it's a little tougher to compare to last year, because last year was kind of an outlier with all the permits that came. Those were all classified as commercial, but I can tell you that so far in 2020, we've received over 70 submittals and have issued over 50. Someone recently issued are the, of course, the Ridgefield House, 7-Eleven, the Simons International Office, Edward Jones, State Farm, First Centennial Mortgage, Taps, Beer House, and Brood Awakening. So a lot of issuances up at the Discovery Ridge development. And then some notable projects that were recently submitted and are under review include several Pioneer Village shell buildings, Hidden Oasis Salon, the Bluffs shell building, Ichi Teriyaki, and the Seppinen Construction building over east of the freeway. So those are my updates, and I'm happy to take any questions.
When's the service station going to open?
Sorry, Mr. Wells, I didn't quite.
Probably don't have the answer, but when is the service station going to open at Rose Hour?
The Rose Hour is fueling station. I don't know the exact date, but I have signed off on their temporary occupancy, so I think they're aiming for very soon.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, anything further for us? Kirk?
Okay, thank you. Just one last update on the final numbers for the Shop Local and Save. Really, really good responses on that program. Total rebate amount was $46,260. The amount that was spent at local businesses, $1,000. And I want to provide a little context to that. That's just the amount that qualified to get the rebate amount. In some cases, We had five qualified them for their rebate, but they turned in 10 or 15 receipts. So the actual expenses were quite a bit more than that. We didn't track every different receipt that came in if they had. But a couple of other things, 40 businesses actually benefited from that, and 2,134 separate shopping trips to go ahead and get to that rebate amount. That was pretty significant. I'm really happy with what happened with the Shop Local and Save. As we were receiving our receipts, we also got several positive comments. And I just want to read a few. To support the community. This program is great and is a huge help to our family during these times. Thank you so much for all you do. Thank you for encouraging people to shop local. We try to shop local as much as possible. Regardless, this was a nice bonus. I was super excited to see your promotion to support local Ridgeville businesses. Thank you so much for doing this. We moved in about 2 weeks ago and absolutely love it up here. Thank you for having us as a part of the community. And just thank you for providing this great incentive to buy local during this pandemic. We appreciate the discount to our utility bill. There's a lot more comments that we got, but just the general response from the community was really positive, and really am glad that we were able to offer this and wanted to thank council for approving that.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
That's all I've got tonight, unless you have any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Notenaris.
Just a couple of real quick things. The Whodunits Last Clue is out, so this week we will know who stole the golden key and how many people participated. I still am not sure. Also, Big Paddle First. I will send you the link to that when our virtual event is up and ready to go, so you are all able to participate. And the t-shirt campaign, which was also to support local businesses, has ended. And the chamber with us to figure out a way to distribute the cash raised to the Family Resource Center and businesses. They are basically using a grant program, so businesses can apply for a grant up to $500 to help them with impacts from COVID or reopening expenses. So a lot going on to help our local businesses. I think that's it.
Thank you. And finally, Chief Brooks.
Well, things have been going along pretty good. We have had a spike in auto vehicle prowls, which I was sent something out to the city manager today. My two-step plan to reduce that: have people lock the doors to their cars, because I have found that most of our victims have left their doors open. And then the other thing is to call dispatch when you see someone suspicious doing something suspicious at a suspicious. Old people going for strolls at 3:45 in the morning. Things like that. Suspicious. And don't worry about bothering us. We're not bothered at all if you want to call 911 and have us go and talk to somebody who might be walking around in a black hoodie in the middle of the night looking in your car. So we're perfectly okay with that. So the other thing I want to mention is we've been getting a lot of great support from the community. I mean, you've all seen a lot of the negativity directed toward police departments, but here in Ridgefield, we have been getting a lot of good support from people. Gentleman that came to the back door the other day, knocked on the back door and gave me an envelope and said, "Hey, we just want you to know that we really support you guys." And it was just like, thanks on the envelope. And I, you know, took the envelope and I said, "Well, thank you very much." And I went back inside and then I opened it up and it was some gift cards for people to get sandwiches like over at Rosar's. And now I really wished I'd gotten the man's name so I could write up the thank you note. So if you're that gentleman, thank you very much. So That's all I've got to report right now. So happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Chief Brooks. With that, we are adjourned.